And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pellegrini Financial Investment Planning Council's first quarter conference call, the bull that was, the virus that is. I would now like to turn the meeting over to Ryan Morcombe. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator, and welcome everyone this morning to our first quarter conference call. And I like to say it was a dull and boring quarter, but by far it was far different than that. It was a quarter that definitely brought a lot of different events to the table and to the markets. And yes, the bull that was and the virus that is exactly that, where the bull market that we've been in the last 10-plus years now, we can say officially has ended, and the virus, of course, coronavirus, being the catalyst, I guess, for the market to correct as it did. Not that specific to coronavirus, but certainly, you know, as we went into the end of last year and the start of this year, I mean, we certainly felt that markets were quite fairly priced and then some, and maybe even a little rich. And I think in that respect, the markets need any kind of excuse probably to create a bit of a correction or a pullback. Coronavirus certainly wasn't that catalyst. And then coronavirus, of course, expanded well beyond to just creating a market correction. And we've been through other viruses in the past with markets. And certainly nothing to the same extent as what coronavirus itself has done. I think in that respect, where coronavirus has made a difference is obviously the way health organizations around the globe manage the virus, because it is not a flu, of course, it is a virus, and so they impose certain lifestyles and restrictions to our economies, in essence, and so those economies, of course, had certain elements of them shut down, certainly dialed back, and we'll get into a lot of this in more detail here shortly. So we saw the first quarter start off the year with a bit of a bang, basically carrying on the market runs of the previous year and 10 years for that matter, and all the way up until the third week of June, in essence, it was a positive and a fairly positive market. And at that point, that's when, you know, again, more of these economic shutdowns started to take hold. I think the seriousness of the virus was taking effect that people were recognizing. And so the markets obviously turned the other way. And, you know, I think in more typical, I guess, bear markets, you see sort of a build-up to a pullback and a more often than not, more of a prolonged pullback. Well, this pullback basically happened within the context of 4 weeks, from the third week of February to the third week of March. Boom, boom, boom. Basically, that was the market pullback that took this bull run into bear territory, where most of the indices, broad main indices that we would follow, S&P 500 or TSX or the Euro, really were down 35% on average. And that, of course, is well past the 20% threshold of where a bear market would be considered. Like I said, I think the difference here is the fact that the speed of it was quite surprising. Like I said, within the context of 4 weeks, that was it, and the market pulled back. And so from that point, you know, the market found a quick bottom, it seemed, in that third week of March and pulled up a little bit towards the end of the quarter of March 30th, and that was kind of where we carried on from that point. But in that quarter itself, that's where we saw a lot of different things go on, I guess, in respect to what was happening within the world's markets. Like I said, that first quarter, the speed of that downfall was more than anything the biggest surprise. Part of that maybe could be partly due to more electronic trading that goes on nowadays than perhaps in previous bear markets. So a lot of the e-trading or ETFs, futures, hedges also had an impact on how fast that market fell. And like I said, it is based on the fact that we saw a lot of economic shutdowns. So, you know, we're going to see some pretty big negative numbers, I think, over the next quarter, including this past one. But, for instance, economic growth in Canada was down minus 9% in March, or basically 2%, 2.6% of GDP. You're going to see in the U.S. job numbers of 22 million more job losses. We'll probably see that number increase. You know, you might be seeing like an 18% unemployment rate, which would be unheard of in modern times, similar perhaps to the Great Depression, but again, totally two different dynamics on what was going on there. And that's what I mean. The numbers are going to be astronomical in some respects on what we see for the negative markets and negative economic numbers. So that, there's much of that yet to come. You know, obviously, with everything shut down, global trade has been impacted dramatically. And I think what everyone's kind of watching is how these economies evolve or come out of these lockdowns. And, you know, China being the first impacted, China being kind of the first coming out of it. You see other economies that have started to slowly open up, you know, mainly the Asian economies there, South Korea, Thailand to the world, you know, New Zealand, Australia getting closer to that point of trying to open up again to certain elements of the economy. Same thing is happening in Europe, and the same thing is going to be happening here in North America. Again, they've all kind of witnessed the time frame, I guess, and the format of how the economy was shut down, what length of time, how the health world dealt with infections, treatments, and then whether they flattened the curve or not, how they came out of that. And that timing is kind of a domino effect. Like I said, we've seen it in Asia, we've seen it in Europe, we're seeing it in North America, and that time will come to where we see a bit more of a easing in our own restrictions and lockdowns. Specific to interest rates, of course, started the year off in Canada with 1.75% Bank of Canada prime lending rate. Well, and it was basically steady through the previous number of years. The U.S. had cut, you know, interest rates a couple times there in the prior year. But, you know, at the beginning of the year, of course, there was not really any expectation of any major substantial cuts. We knew the global economy generally was slowing, and there could have been certainly a rate cut that might have occurred. But as this coronavirus took effect and economic shutdowns took place, well, there were some dramatic cuts in interest rates. And the central bank here in Canada cut three times, basically, 50 basis points each time, and an emergency setting rate cuts as well, where we went from 1.75% to 0.25% now. Interest rate, Bank of Canada prime lending rate of 0.25%, which is basically effectively zero. A similar sort of thing happened, of course, in the States. Like I said, they had cut a little earlier in 2019 as well, but really we're similar to our rate, and of course, boom, 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 again, cut rates dramatically and in quick fashion. And again, basically 0.25% or effectively zero. And you see that, of course, across basically most of the globe, whether it's in Europe or Asia. You saw interest rates come down dramatically. And that was one of the levers, one of the tools for the central banks to manage the economy more than anything in this time frame. That said, of course, I think you'll see various rates be impacted by that. Of course, federal lending rates, of course, government rates, you'll see that as a lower rates across the board, really. And that's, you know, a good thing, obviously, for the governments, of course, that are borrowing tons of money to deal with this crisis. Not really good for GIC rates, positive maybe for some mortgage holders who, you know, all based on the 5-year bond rates, will have lower, effectively lower anyways, mortgage rates, and then we saw that bit of an impact there. Nor near zero, of course, but you know, certainly cheaper rates than before. That doesn't mean it's the same for corporate rates. So lending rates to corporations and in the high yield market, corporate and rate bond market, you saw some good companies where rates were, you know, when they went back to the banks in this marketplace, depending where they were. Suncor was a good example of somewhere where they had a rates that were maybe effectively 3-4%, but then refinanced at 5 or 6. So they actually saw an increase in their lending rates there, and part of, well, that's all basically tied to the fact of risk, right? So the banks and financial institutions are looking at the risk factors of various sectors of the economy. And so while we see lower rates across the board, in the background you see corporate or high yield rates that actually might have increased. And for some, of course, they did. Where interest rates go right now is probably nowhere. Obviously, they can't go any lower. I suppose in theory they could go a little lower and then could hit negative territory. We are effectively zero at the moment. but I think all things being equal right now, that's where they stay, and they'll stay there for the time being. Pardon me. Inflation-wise, obviously inflation to some degree is tied to interest rates as well, but the sense of how inflation is combated. But right now, inflation has been decreasing. That's a big chunk of that tied to the energy complex, and we'll get into that here a little bit later. But inflation basically has been, again, falling back. So where it was generally 2% or above, now we're at 2% or less. So 1.5%, maybe a little bit more here in Canada. But again, we've seen a decrease in the inflation rate. Well, probably expect that to stay the same and carry on that trend for the near term. Long term, with the amount of money that has been pushed into the economies from central banks, you'd expect inflation to increase. You know, we've said that in the past in different time frames, and it's never occurred. Time will tell, I guess, whether that is going to be different this time around. But certainly, inflation isn't a factor at this point. Commodities, and getting into that, I think us in Alberta are always focused on is oil and gas in particular, and certainly oil in particular has fallen precipitously. Of course, to single digit, in some respects now Western Canada selected at zero. For the most part, oil prices have come down across the board. That is a function, of course, of demand disruption more than anything. So, where, you know, we were at probably 105, 110 million barrels of oil per day of global usage, we've seen from demand destruction probably 30 million barrels per day come off, right? That is not in use or need or demand at this point in time. And that was, you know, coming down the pipe from a while back, and I know, you know, we had some bigger headlines, of course, when Trump had gotten the Saudis and Russia to negotiate a big oil production cut. Well, that cut was somewhat meaningless, and everyone kind of knew this at the time. That cut came after an increase in production to begin with, so the actual cut might have amounted to 4 or 5 million barrels per day, but that was kind of meaningless when everyone knew already that there was probably 20 million barrels of demand destruction already at that point. And of course, they really had a pretty good idea of where storage capacity was, because even at that point in time, storage would have been maxed out probably by mid-May. So this negotiated cut was really somewhat meaningless, especially when it wasn't going to take effect till May 1st. And so oil, of course, trended downwards, as it should have. And like I said, at that point, the negotiated headline production cut was more or less just a headline. Enough for everyone to say, you know, like Trump, I negotiated a deal, and the Saudis and Russians to say, see, yeah, we committed big numbers here to cuts, when in reality, it had very little impact on the oil markets. And of course, we saw that accordingly. And so, at the end of the day, Yeah, oil prices continue to trend downwards. I know in the last week or two there, of course, when the last May's futures contract came over, we had a lot of negative numbers. And that was a futures contract for May deliveries. You'll probably see the same thing in June or something similar to that. That is different than spot prices. So spot prices being I'm buying a barrel of oil today, what am I paying for it? Well, that was still positive. That was still in double digits in the WTI price. Western Canada Select, yes, did get into single digits and still there. And right now, effectively zero. And that isn't just a Canadian issue, of course. And we saw a lot of U.S. different blends that hit single digits, and we're talking like $7 for West Texas Sour. There was even an asphalt grade of Wyoming crude that went negative back in March, right? 19 cents negative. So it's not just a Canadian issue. It is certainly a global issue, and certainly a North American and U.S. issue. And so at this point now, we're seeing a lot of shut-ins of production. So at the end of the day, and anyone can read into this how they want, I suppose, but to me and I think to many in the markets, Saudis and Russians at the end of the day want to feel some pain for U.S. shale, right, and cause a bit of pain there. And they were not going to cut unless of the U.S. shale cut. And, back again, even when in negotiation with Trump, there was already cuts that were taking place, or shut-ins that were taking place. That, of course, is being escalated to the point now where we could probably see 2 million barrels per day or more being shut in the U.S. In Canada, we're nearing 1 million barrels a day. We're likely to get past that to even 1.3 plus is what they're talking about of production being cut back. And everyone around the globe is cutting back. And yes, Saudis and Russians to some degree, certainly Asian markets have shut in a little bit. South American markets certainly have shut down. So there's a lot of production cuts across the board. And it's really forced upon by markets now at this point because of the fact that there is no storage capacity. So again, those prices have come down accordingly. When you look at the oil markets, how fast that rebounds is probably a function of how fast economies open. Oil production, for the most part, 70% of it anyways, is related to transportation in regards to usage, right? So while vehicles are being parked and idled in someone's garage, airplanes are flying far less and far fewer, ocean liners, everything that uses oil and gas in that manner, until that comes back, you won't see that demand come back. So until the economy starts opening up and people start moving, whether it's by vehicle, whether it's by plane or ocean ships, whatever, only then will you start seeing demand pick up in the oil and gas side of things. That we would hope would occur, of course, through the course of the summertime here. I mean, that's not easy to predict at this point and not really in the control of anyone else other than health authorities. Will demand get back to where it was at the end of the year to where it started? Probably not. Right? So certainly you can see a downward pressure on oil prices for some time yet, certainly through this year. And until the economy gets back to normal, well, now you get back to normal pricing, which at the beginning of the year was $55, $60 per barrel, and that's the number that probably most people, most economies can certainly live by. Time will tell. Other than that, you know, most of the other commodity prices, natural gas still is abundant and quite low in pricing. We saw some of the metals, core industrials, coppers, iron ore, short a little bit here in the short term. Some of the more precious metals like palladiums and platinums remain quite strong. Gold was positive really through this first part of the year. And again, more of a safe haven from an investment perspective than anything else. So, you know, that part of the market has been good, generally speaking. And I wouldn't see a whole lot of changes there in those dynamics. Currencies, probably the biggest thing was seeing more of a quicker and volatile swing in the Canadian dollar as we went through this market correction in March. And we saw the dollar really trend down to 69 cents in that range. And, you know, generally lately we've been around 71 cents, 72 at most, but that's probably a range that is likely to hold for a period of time here at the moment. I think it was a bit surprising to see the Canadian dollar fall as much as it did, more so with the speed of it again, because it was a very quick drop. The U.S. dollar generally was strong against most. Again, that is that safe haven status that the U.S. dollar still retains, whether it's justified or not, that's the reality. So you saw the U.S. dollar basically was kind of the strength of the global currencies. And again, we saw a lot of other dollars, currencies drop against the U.S., and most of it was against short-term reaction, and like a lot of them, like the Canadian dollar, kind of bounced back up to maybe more of a normal range for where they would be floating at. So in that respect, I think where we are right now is we've seen central banks and governments basically do a concerted effort to support the economy where it's at currently. So from the central bank's perspective, lowering interest rates across the board to basically effectively zero, we've seen central banks pump a lot of money into the system, so bond purchasing programs where they are buying these bonds and then they're giving basically that cash availability to the institutions to redeploy into the economy in some way, shape, or form. That's very supportive of markets currently as well, as a side effect. Not that that's their intention necessarily, but that is a bit of a side effect. At the same time, we've seen governments go to great lengths to appease the markets, or the economy, I should say. And so a number of different programs, of course, that help those unemployed to businesses, and just providing liquidity basically to the end consumer. Of course, this is all being done by debt. That is something that has to be reconciled, I guess, to some degree, and then reconciled is probably a bit of a loose term in the sense that governments probably are seeing this as debt that never has to be repaid, right? They'll just absorb it into long-term growth of the economy and their GDPs, if you want to look at it that way, I guess. But that's where, as a whole, from where we stand currently, though, is where, again, definitely a concerted effort between governments, central banks, to really appease to the economic fundamentals. And I think as the health authorities allow economies to open up again, there's a lot of these aspects of our economy that can get back to normal. It may be a new normal in different ways, and that's, you know, beyond our talk here today, but back to normal, I guess, is the best way to put it. And so that, like I said, I think is where we'll see the economic numbers turn to as time goes by. In the short term, I would say we're going to see a bit of a disconnect from where markets are priced at to what the economic numbers are telling us, because the economic numbers, certainly in this first quarter and then certainly in the next quarter, are going to be pretty ugly in the sense of significant revenue drops for various corporations, earnings drop. You know, you're just going to see a whole lot of economic data that looks horrible that will not really relate to where markets are today. What markets are pricing in right now is the fact that we get through this health crisis and come out at the other end, whether that's in early summer, end of summer, early fall, but where we're back to a more normalized economy and lifestyle. And that's what I believe markets are pricing in now versus what it is on the ground. Because the economic numbers will not look good when they produce them out in the next few weeks, next quarter, and so on. And so that's where I think where we are looking at from an investment perspective, security selection more than anything, asset allocation in particular as well, that focuses on where are the best opportunities, where do they lie, where are the best future returns to be coming from. You know, I think it's still going to be a tougher market, especially in the fixed income and the interest rate environment that we're in. You know, again, there's a difference between you know, rates currently that are set by central banks and the governments might, or financial institutions are dealing with versus corporates and high yield. I kind of talked about that difference between how those interest rates are impacting different components of the economy. And so that's where I think, again, from an investment perspective, it is looking at where those opportunities lie. And so, again, there's some great companies that are going to be refinancing at much higher rates, which is good from an investment perspective. Where the government rates, again, you're probably going to see continued low-rate environment for some time as we come out of this crisis. And actually, I think the biggest thing is seeing how fast the health authorities allow the economy to come back to a new normal. And like I said, the new normal is probably a good way to term it because there will be some prolonged differences of how everyone works together in this new environment that will change, and how those changes, we've changed how we operate, as many other businesses have, how that impacts going forward or work in the future. Do people do work from home more often, commute less, change the way how they do business? There's supply chains that are going to be reconfigured, I guess, to be probably more homebound, right? So there's less reliance perhaps on global connections, global trade in some respects. And so that, those are all going to be new things that are going to be developing and evolve. That right now it's hard to foresee, but we just do, I think, do understand it's going to be a new normal when we do come out of it. So I know over the last month we've spent a lot of time on the phone talking to different clients. We've sent out a lot of communications electronically by email and trying to do our best to keep everyone up to date and up to speed on where we're at. And this is no different, so hopefully this is a little longer call than normal, but hopefully everyone's appreciated the information here today. And at any point along the line you have questions, whether it's a call today, whether it's markets in general, economy, portfolios, feel free to give us a call at the office. We're still open, still functioning, and we're all available to talk. So whether it's myself, Parker, or Perry, we're all available to speak to any of you if you have that desire and need. So I'll cut it off here. Thank you again for joining us on this first quarter conference call. Hopefully there's a little less news to talk about in this next quarter coming up. But once again, thank you for joining us, and look forward to the next call in the second quarter. Thank you, and take care.